Quick announcement while you're doing that is this coming, I think it's Thursday, yes, afternoon, at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 3:15-ish, we'll have another Let's Discuss ACIM webinar, and this will be my first time moderating, so be patient and tolerant because I'm still learning the ropes. Tara Hollander has done a great job, and she's been mentoring me, but we still have a few bugs to work out, and we're going to do that Monday. Hopefully, I'll be a little more polished than the first dry run I did the other day because there's a lot of new controls in the pro version of Zoom, so that I'm mastering. Yeah, so. But it's a great series. Dr. Bob Rosenthal is going to be talking about the meaning of Christmas and resurrection and not resurrection. Anyway, I'll have to look at the top. But if you go to acm.org/events, which I will do right now, so I can get the right information, you can sign up for those webinars if you're not already signed up. And they're really good content. Dr. Bob is wonderful, and he always shares great insights. It's Christmas, New Year's, and rebirth, not resurrection. Yeah, because that's the re was right, but the second part of the word was jumping ahead to Easter. So anyway, that's 2 o'clock on Thursday, and you can go to acim.org/events to register for that. And I encourage people to do that. Also, this is sort of an aside, but I think I might have mentioned last week that this is not part of FIP, but he personally has some tickets to the CMC conference in May, Memorial Day weekend in Los Angeles. And if you're interested, you can email him. And if anybody's interested, they can email me to email him. And there are significantly discounted tickets to the Community Miracles Center conference in Los Angeles this year, which I'm happy to report I'm going to be going to, and I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. I haven't been to the last few of them, so. Uh-huh, exactly. Saying for what we're sharing is that Jesus in his book that we're, what this ongoing conversation is all about says, the only difference that he says is that, he has, complete trust in Holy Spirit and nothing else. And that's the only difference is we think we have something else, which is our residual investment in the ego, which is our obstacles to peace, which is might not be a bad segue to the reading, huh? Woo! We're like hurtling forward like a turbocharged turtle, or maybe a snail on steroids. Got a little alliteration in there. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and really is a delight to be able to do this every week with you and share Ken's brilliant writing and then talk about it a little bit. So, yeah. I do. I have us on the middle of page 118 in the printed version of the book. So I'll just dive in and hopefully it'll give you a cue to where to resynchronize. Okay, so the quote from chapter 19 is, since the whole book is about chapter 19 in the text, are you not glad that heaven cannot be sacrificed and sacrifice cannot be asked of you? That sounds like a pretty big deal, doesn't it, for those of us who identify as egos, and we think, which is, the whole ego thought system is about sacrifice, right? So, I mean, we believe that we sacrifice perfect oneness, and the unconscious guilt over, hurling God into this, bottomless pit of fire in our mind that doesn't exist, and some horrific, Neolithic ritual that we think we participated in that didn't happen, And no, God wasn't destroyed, and perfect oneness is still, you know, smiling happily and wordlessly saying nothing happened. So anyway, Ken's commentary, which I'm sure will somehow relate to that, what I just shared, is this is true good news that A Course in Miracles brings us. God does not demand sacrifice. Yeah, it's only ego that does. We do not have to give up anything in order to be happy or to be saved. We merely have to shift how we look at everything. Sounds familiar. Thus, the ego's principle of one or the other is denied. Our reality does not necessitate the sacrifice of death of God, and God's reality does not necessitate. It's not a difficult word. I can say that. Does not necessitate our own sacrifice or death. Again, that is why we have what we have on chart. Why what we have on chart A? I'll get through this honestly. Why what we have on chart A is so important for understanding how A Course in Miracles suggests we look at the world. Okay, well, I'm gonna flip to chart A just for a moment, because chart A basically is like a little triangle that points to the left, and on the left part of it there's the words mind and decision, which would be, you know, Ken's term, the decision making faculty of the mind, or DM for short. Sometimes he abbreviates that. And then there's two paths, you know, one that goes to the ego fear thought system, and that identifies us with the world and the body. And then the other option, the real alternative, is of course we describe it, is Holy Spirit love and forgiveness. And the love part is not really choosing love directly. It's really choosing to deny the denial of love, which is really done typically by forgiving ourselves for the barriers that we've made. So, exactly. Yeah, we choose to. Bingo. Exactly. And that's why Ken says it's not a course in yes, it's a course in not no. Because we don't have to affirm what we already are. You know, no number of mantras or affirmations of the truth is going to undo the ego. We have to actually look at the ego and see it as the nothing that it is, with the help of the Holy Spirit, in order to dismantle, de-energize, and ultimately vaporize that holographic fantasy that we made up. Exactly. It is. It really is. Yeah. So, Ken goes on and says, I'll start that sentence again. Again, that is why what we have on chart A is so important for understanding how A Course in Miracles suggests we look at the world. We do not try to change the world. We just ask for help to change our minds about it. And then, from chapter 19, there is no obstacle that you can place before our union, for in your holy relationship, I am there already. We will surmount all obstacles together, for we stand within the gates and not outside. How easily the gates are opened from within to let peace through to bless the tired world.
Hey, Bruce?
Yeah.
Thank you, Carrie. Carrie just said that there's no sound from me. It is because I had it on stereo mix. Because I was, that's crazy. I don't know how it got on stereo mix, actually. I don't remember doing that. But we're going to have to start all over.
Well, that's okay. That's all right.
Well, now I know what we're going to say.
That's fine. Should we just, you know, since it's still recording, should we just start from where we left off last week?
Start, yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. I presume that means the intro as well, right?
That's right. And so welcome, everybody. You are here. We are here for the journey home. with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson, and we're going through the book, The Journey Home by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, and it's a discussion of the obstacles to peace from A Course in Miracles. And just so you know what the joke is, we've just been talking and not recording because I had it on the wrong setting. So if you hear 15 minutes of nothing, you won't, because I'll cut all that out for the final recording. But anyway.
Or if you listen from the beginning of you know, the bottom of the hour, and you're hearing deja vu, it's, you know, you're not going crazy. It's just that we decided to get Lynn's comments on the recording as well as mine.
That's right. There you go. Okay.
And I just had a quick announcement, which is next Thursday at 2 o'clock, Pacific time, that is, Dr. Bob Rosenthal will be giving another Let's Discuss ACIM webinar. I actually will be helping moderate with that this time. My first experience with that, so I'm learning the ropes. Anyway, that'll be 2 o'clock Pacific time, December 12th, Thursday, this coming Thursday. If you're in 2019, if you're listening to a recording. And the topic is Christmas, New Year's, and Rebirth, Part 3 of 3 with Dr. Bob Rosenthal. And we already did a little quick dry run. And already just the short samples of things that he plans to share already was, you know, wowed me. So I think everyone's going to enjoy it. And then if you go to acim.org/events, you can register for Thursday's event for free. And also you can listen to prior recordings. And there are, more than a half dozen of them. And some of them feature Tam Morgan, who's also the other co-president of Foundation for Inner Peace, and some recordings with Judy Scutch-Whitson, who is the founder and president of, the outgoing president, but still chairman of the board and founder of Foundation for Inner Peace, and just some great stuff there. And of course, the rest of the website has all kinds of wonderful stuff, as does the other sister organization, FACIM.org. So ACIM.org and FACIM.org are the two that every course student can benefit from.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you. And also, just to let people know, this is on Zoom, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And Zoom is something we're getting familiar with. And that is 2 p.m. Is that Pacific time?
Pacific time.
Okay, 2 p.m. Yeah. Pacific time, which would make it 12 noon on Eastern time. So, perfect.
Let's see. Now that would be Eastern would be.
Wait.
3 hours Thursday. It'd be 5 p.m. Eastern time.
5 p.m. Eastern. Why?
Yeah.
I am just terrible with time. And yet I deal with it all the time.
Well, it's a vast illusion, as they say. But
okay.
There are plenty of rules in the dream that have to be dealt with.
Huh? All right. So, yeah, and that's one of them. And, you know, how I get myself hooked up into something that has a schedule and times that are in different time zones. And I'm constantly, not so much anymore, but I think the last big confusion I had was with Maureen Muldoon, who was telling me something on Central Time. And I was, of course, thinking it was Eastern time, and so I arrived an hour late, or early. I don't remember which. Anyway.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, we've been reading for about a year now, The Journey Home, The Obstacles to Peace and A Course in Miracles, this wonderful volume that discusses in depth, with plenty of other resources from the course brought in, the chapter 19 of the text of A Course in Miracles. And that's by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, one of our favorite, if not the favorite, teacher of A Course in Miracles. And all his great insights and his, you know, line-by-line commentary on Chapter 19 is a wonderful inspirational message. So why don't I pick up where we left off?
Okay.
And for those who joined at the beginning of our conversation this morning, this will be a little repetitious, but there's only a couple of paragraphs here. So.
Well, actually, no, because that didn't record either. No, neither side of us recorded.
Well, yeah. In that case, it'll be brand new.
For me, too. All right, okay. Go on.
And thanks for the listeners who let us know. So.
All right.
You still there?
I'm here.
Yep. Okay, shall I continue?
Yes, please read.
Okay, so the first quote from chapter 19, which is about the middle of page 118 if you're following along in the Journey Home by Ken Wapnick, begins, "Are you not glad that heaven cannot be sacrificed and sacrifice cannot be asked of you?" Ken comments, "This is true good news that A Course in Miracles brings to us. God does not demand sacrifice. We do not have to give up anything in order to be happy or to be saved. We merely have to shift how we look at everything. Thus, the ego's principle of one or the other is denied. Our reality does not necessitate the sacrifice of death, the sacrifice or death of God. And God's reality does not necessitate our own sacrifice or death." Again, that is why we have on chart A, what we have on chart A is so important for understanding how A Course in Miracles suggests we look at the world. We do not try to change the world. We just ask for help to change our minds about it. And chart A basically has a very simplified version of Ken's chart that shows the decision maker as being sort of the fulcrum, the place where we can either switch back and forth for the ego thought system or the Holy Spirit's thought system. And it's always the power of the mind and the decision-making faculty of the mind, in particular, that A Course in Miracles is addressing. It's not ever pitched to the Bruces and the Lynns and the whoever's listening to the world. It's pitched to the decision-maker in our mind that is outside of space and time, that has the ability to choose against the spatially, temporally identified egos that, with all of their foibles and misunderstandings and erroneous beliefs about everything.
Exactly. And you know what? I just realized you did record because I had it on stereo mix. It was you were going through the microphone. It was just me who was going through. So you got that. So okay.
do you want to read the next?
Sure. Let's see. Did you just read the quote? There is no obstacle.
No, that's what's next.
Okay, all right. I just was not too sure. So so Jesus says in chapter 19, in the Obstacles to Peace, he says, "There is no obstacle that you can place before our union, for in your holy relationship, I am there already. We will surmount all obstacles together, for we stand within the gates and not outside. How easily the gates are opened from within. You let peace through to bless the tired world." And this is what we're talking about, which probably my part didn't record, which is fine, is that the obstacle is not non-existent because we already have this holy relationship. We already are the Holy Son of God. We already have the Christ mind to join with, or we already joined with the Christ mind. So the only thing that makes it seem like we're not is these beliefs or these illusions of these obstacles. And the obstacles, Jesus, really makes a big deal about pointing out to us what the obstacles are, because if we know what they are, then we can recognize them and not let them hinder us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, as you're sharing that, I was just thinking, couple of metaphors actually came to mind. One is, sometimes, department stores and different places, for psychological observation, they have these, two-way mirrors where the people that are being observed only see a mirror, and you're typically in a darkened room, so no light gets through. There's people doing the observing, which, like in a department store might be, the security staff, looking for shoplifters or whatever. But it's kind of like, sort of like that in terms of, the Holy Spirit can see into the dream, but not identify with it. But when you're within the dream, we don't think that we can see the Holy Spirit. As egos, we don't. There's no such thing as that. I mean, there's no such thing as hope or understanding or relationship or connection, or let alone peace, love, joy, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, those are all, impossible abstractions for the ego's, crippled mind to try to understand. Whereas from, you know, the greater perspective, it's completely transparent. And I was thinking, you know, the metaphor of the door, you know, this wall or door that seems to be locked, you know, when we think we're outside the peace of God or our real identity outside of space and time, it's almost like there's this, you know, granite or, you know, steel wall or whatever that's, you know, millions of miles thick, and we don't even see that there's a door, or if we do, it's welded shut, there's no handle, you know, or, you know, those kind of things. Whereas from the Holy Spirit's perspective, if there's a door at all, it's you know, welded open, and there's no lock, and you know, there's nothing barring the way. But that's only because that thought system is a purely non-dual thought system. It doesn't see any barriers between any part of the sonship, as the Course would describe it, and any other part. But from within the dream of duality, everything seems to be apart and separate, and everything seems to be a wall or a barrier or some kind of, you know, insurmountable obstacle that stands in the way of our peace. But that's exactly what needs to be transcendent. And you know, sometimes people use, you know, psychotropic and hallucinogenic drugs to attain those states. You know, I recently rewatched the Jill Bolte Taylor, My Stroke of Insight video on the TED Talks series, and you know, things like that, where people have had these mystical experiences over the years, where, you know, the barriers were you know, temporarily removed, and a lot of mystics down through the ages, you know, have talked about this. It's like, you know, all this stuff, and even modern physics, you know, it's like there really isn't any other thing. Even physicist John Wheeler said there's no out there, but because from day one of identifying with a little baby body and growing up with, you know, constant propaganda that is of our own making, you know, we've reinforced this belief that there's separate things and separate people and separate stuff and individual goals and you know, private thoughts and yada, 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 the whole gamut of stuff. And it's just a whole big made-up facade that, you know, brilliantly says, it's not sinful, evil, or wicked, it's just silly. But we don't see that from where we're at as egos.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't. And it's really funny, as you were speaking, I was thinking of several different things I've seen people post on Facebook and such. Like there's one of these two dogs who are on either side of a gate, and they're like, you know, fussing at each other from either side of the gate, like they're gonna, if they got through that gate, they would, you know, attack each other and whatever. But then you look and you see there's no fence. It's just a gate.
Uh-huh.
And I've also seen, you know, things of, you know, there's a gate and no fence, and, you know, people thinking that they can't get through, like in Blazing Saddles, when they had to go through the toll road.
Oh, I love that skit.
That is just so hilarious.
That's one of my favorite ones, yeah. In fact, I probably mentioned it in our conversations, because, you know, here's this vast expanse of desert, you know, miles in either direction around this little, you know, 5 or 10 foot wide toll gate that's erected out of nowhere. And Slim Pickens and his band of mean hombres, you know, realize that, you know, believe that the only way is through this toll gate, you know, and that they could just very easily go around.
They stop in one by one.
Exactly.
Pay the toll and go to the gate. Yeah, yep. That's exactly it. You know, the gate, there is no fence. There is no, you know, what is holding us back is our own belief in this thought of what we think has happened here, and this thought of being so disconnected from the reality of it. And it's like, you know, when they say, you know, the drop of water may fear, you know, to fall into the ocean because it's going to be lost, but really what happens is it becomes totally connected to and becomes a part of the ocean.
Yeah, so, that's a great metaphor.
So that's what we're, you know, we're fearful of that lack of control, that loss of you know, this being my, you know, my, me, this is me. you know, and I am, you know, safe in this structure that I am, and I can't be attacked in this structure. Or if I am attacked, at least I have something I can attack back with. You know, this is why we hold this structure in this form, and the entire world is just really just us trying to hold everything together, and instead of letting go and becoming a part of everything, you know.
Right. So what we're trying to hold together is really the belief in separation. We're trying to, you know, reinforce a wall in our mind that exists, you know, in our imagination only between our seemingly separate cells and every other seemingly separate self, whether it's animal, mineral, vegetable, or people, you know, or whatever, or, you know, abstract, whatever. You know, it's a, we've made up an imaginary reality that seems so real we never bother to question it. But those who have say, hey, check over here. This little crack, the light is getting through.
Yeah, really.
and it's, it's peaceful beyond this fearful dream of separate interests and competition and struggle and strife lack of grace. You know, it's like, it's actually kind of nice on the other side. You might like it.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful how Jesus says that. The topic of special interest is this starting today in the lessons is what is the miracle.
And
it has something that just reminds me of this, what we just read so much, when Jesus says, we will surmount all obstacles together, for we stand within the gates and not outside. How easily the gates are opened from within to let peace through, to bless the tired world. And today's, that topic of special relevance, Jesus says, this is one of the most beautiful, statements in the entire course. It just, and that this morning when I was reading it to my group, it made me cry. It just brought tears to my eyes. He says, miracles fall like drops of healing rain from heaven on a dry and dusty world where starved and thirsty creatures come to die.
Yep, exactly.
Now they have water. Now the world is green, and everywhere the signs of life spring up to show that what is born can never die, for what has life has immortality. Go on.
Yeah, I had the same inspiration when I was reading it earlier this morning myself. And what struck me funny is a perfect sentence that could easily be taken out of context without the other sentences that are around it at a minimum is, and now the world is green. if you live in Nevada, that may not be the case, you know, or if you, it's all metaphor. I mean, everything in the course is a metaphor, and it's a metaphor about one of the two thought systems in the mind. So it's important to keep that in perspective. But yeah, at the beginning of that, what is the 13th what is, and the second half of the workbook, there's another favorite quote that's really a nice summary of the course, as so much of it is, because it's all holographic. It begins, a miracle is a correction. It does not create nor really change at all. It merely looks on devastation and reminds the mind that what it sees is false. And that's it. We just have to look, the devastation being the dualistic dream of the ego that made up a world of space and time and bodies and proclaimed, you know, loudly as a little speck of dust, as loud as a little speck of dust can shout, of imaginary dust, I'm real, this is the real deal. But that's what we do. Because it's so elaborate and we have these complex bodies and personalities and this sophisticated world with all of its stuff and yada yada, and it goes on, and it's so engaging and mesmerizing and hypnotizing that we forget, wait a minute, what if I made this whole thing up?
Yeah.
You know, and Jesus said, there is no world. You know, what if you realize you made this up? What if you realize that this is just an illusion, that this is a crazy, silly, insane tiny, mad idea that we just took seriously. We forgot to laugh. What if that was the case?
What if that was the case? And what if the only thing that's keeping me from actually experiencing that is a silly belief that can be changed, that can be dropped? You know, and a lot of times, you know, people, we look at this and say, well, you know, Jesus says it's going to take millions of years, and I'm not going to do that in this lifetime, and I'm certainly not going to do that, you know, this week or next month, or, you know, before I turn 80, or, you know, that's kind of impossible. But it's not impossible, because it is a shift in perception that can be had at any time and done at any time. And reminder, Jesus, the man who, you know, is the example for us, that, you know, whether it's true, the story of Jesus, I don't care. The story is, here is a human being who, at the age of 30 or 25 or 15 or 12, had this, knew this. It wasn't an old man who lived, you know, many lifetimes and finally got to the... It was a young man who was able to do this. And so don't think, well, yeah, but I've just got so much. Do you think you have more troubles than Jesus did? Do you think you have more illusions in your mind than Jesus did? Do you think he was born immaculate with no illusions?
Well, if you do, you can go back and you can listen to the year's worth of conversations that you and I had, Lynn, on the ACIM blog, where we read and discussed Gary's wonderful book, The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, because I think that really, you know, lays the foundation for an awareness that, A, yeah, we need patience, and, you know, on the level of form, because it would be too scary for us to have the veils of forgetfulness and sleep, you know, ripped away from us. And so, you know, none of us is likely to do that. But, you know, so from our perspective, it does seem to take quite a while and perhaps many lifetimes. But you know, the only important thing is right now, right here, what am I doing to restore peace to my mind right now? And that is always a 24/7, 365 opportunity that's ever present, ever available to change teachers. And if when I change teachers, I will feel peace. It may not be the ultimate peace, but a little bit more peaceful. And that accumulates to the point where over time you realize, wow, I'm a whole lot more peaceful on average than I was even 10 years ago, let alone 20, let alone 50, you know, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, not only that, yes, I am so much more peaceful. I also am more loving and less fearful and more accepting and more joyful and less guilt-ridden. And in fact, you know, those are the things, you know, today's lesson talking about my sinlessness is what keeps me safe. That is the absolute truth. You know, has become more and more convinced of my own innocence and understanding more my own connection to the divine and my own, you know, that, you know, whatever I perceive as being less than holy is a story in my mind, and realizing that I can let go of that story and not be bound up by it. You know, these are the things that happen day by day by day by day by day that release us from the fear and the guilt, and release us from this belief in sin, and bring us to the point where we can walk with God in perfect holiness, as the lesson says. You know, it is, and that can be right now. That's this very moment. And yes, I'm a completely different person than I was, you know, 20 years ago. You know, just my entire, you know, thought system and demeanor and the way I deal with things, the way I see things, the way I hear things, my responses have completely shifted. I see it myself. I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is just the perfect thing to be thinking and saying at this time. You know, this is, I'm really, truly being helpful, you know, which I never always suspected I was being, just, you know, well, it was coming from my own mind. And now I just let the Holy Spirit be in charge, and, know, I have completely different everything, and grateful for that. But that's from practicing forgiveness, and doing exactly what Jesus says, or trying to anyway, every day.
It really just takes a lot of patience and practice and gentleness with ourselves, doesn't it? And of course, that spills over into our relationship with everyone else. And over time, we become less of an annoying bastard to be around.
Exactly. And actually, yeah, to ourselves as well.
If we're doing it right.
Excuse me, to myself as well.
Exactly, yeah.
I like myself that much better, too. So look, I'm going to continue reading.
Please do.
All right, so Ken says, what Jesus is saying is that no matter what we do, no matter how much guilt we dump on each other through our special relationships, he is always with us. Nothing can change this fact. This is reminiscent of the opening pages of the manual, which describe how into this hopeless, and this is another part that makes me cry, hopeless, dreary, enclosed learning situation, God sends his teachers to bring a different vision and a different message. And that's from the manual for teachers. And this manual is that Jesus remains... And this message is that Jesus remains fully present to us in our minds if only we turn back to him. In other words, when we choose the ego as our teacher, we identify with its thought system of specialness, leaving all our relationships as special ones. The purpose is to screen out Jesus' presence, since his love represents the end of our individuality. And so there's a quote here from text chapter 8. When you unite with me, you are uniting without the ego, because I have renounced the ego in myself and therefore cannot unite with yours. Our union is therefore the way to renounce the ego in you. Wow, that is pretty amazing. And early on in the text, Jesus is talking to us about what the outcome of uniting with Jesus without the ego, and that's really the way that he says our union is the way to renounce the ego in you. That's it. Join with Jesus and think with Jesus' thoughts and listen with Jesus' ears and think with Jesus' mind. That just
or Jesus isn't your trip. Go with Buddha or Mary Magdalene or Nisargadatta or Maharshi or whatever figure in your mind represents a pure egoless awareness. And again, the individual characters are just symbolic of that awareness. And the whole point is to remind us that we have assumed these roles that are just characters in a dream. But beyond that dream, beyond the special love and the special hate, or the infatuation and the infinuation, as I call it, there's the real love, and that real love is our true identity that we all share, and isn't subject to attack, and as today's workbook lesson reminds us, and it's not vulnerable to any kind of dissolution, because oneness, perfect oneness. By its very nature and very definition, has nothing outside that can attack it. So.
Exactly, and therefore walks with God with total confidence. Walking through the world in the Christ mind, think how that feels to be constantly in knowing that everything is certain, everything is fine, everything is good. Nothing to fear. You can't make a mistake. You can be just a force of love. What a wonderful feeling that is. And, practice that today. That's what I'm doing. I'm practicing that. Being with the Christ in all things and all thoughts and all decisions and all discussions and all, everything I'm seeing and doing. So why don't you go ahead and read now?
Okay. When we realize our mistake, however, and renounce the ego as our teacher, choosing Jesus instead, we automatically identify with his thought system of forgiveness. This turns all our relationships into holy ones.
Woo-hoo.
He is always present in our minds, but when we choose against him, we do not know him, as the gates to peace are closed. Realizing we were wrong and he was right opens the gates of our minds, and peace is the result. And what could be easier than to accept the truth that is already there in our minds and to let go of the defenses of illusion that removed us from our minds? Finally, since all minds are one, our peace is the world's. Do you want to read the next section?
Sure, absolutely. So Jesus says from the obstacles to peace, can it be difficult for us to walk past barriers together when you have joined the limitless? The end of guilt is in your hands to give. Would you stop now to look for guilt in your brother? Holy cow! This is what I was talking about. Jesus always asking questions, although that wasn't probably heard because that was before my recording was going on. But Jesus is always asking questions. And these questions bring about such an incredible shift in your thinking if you listen to the question, ask it of yourself, and you know what the answer is. So he's saying, the end of guilt is in your hands to give. Would you stop now to look for guilt in your brother? How often do we do that? You know, I'm feeling fine, I'm being loving, and oh, but I remember this bad thing you did, or you know, I heard you said something about me, or you know, you voted for the wrong person. You know, I want to love you as much as I can, but you know, I see how guilty you are.
It's not just politicians that dig up dirt on each other. We all do it. The ego strategy is to divide and separate, and the ego is anything that's divisive has to be ego. So, you know, anything that's partisan, if you will, I mean, is you know, by nature a part or a part rather than the whole and not complete, you know, pun intended. And so, you know, the only real party that's worth celebrating and participating in is one that includes everyone. And anything less than perfect oneness is just a part from peace instead of connected with and complete with. And so it's pretty silly, isn't it, that we make such a big deal out of our entrenched separate interests and positions and our stands on things instead of realizing that what we really want is the true communication and the true communion of realizing that we've never left each other and we've never left the perfect oneness that is, you know, our true relationship is in that singular identity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And all that partisanship is just it's just a way of trying to keep us involved in the world and the ego, that believing that I'm right, you know, and how Jesus says, would you rather be right or happy? You know, well, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I want both. I want to be right and happy. But you can't because to be happy doesn't mean that you're wrong. To me, happy means that you have no judgment, no perception of judgment about anything that would diminish your happiness. You know,
we could actually. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we could actually reread the quote that Ken puts from chapter 8 above, and you know, replace ego with divisiveness, and change. It reads pretty much the same, and really might provide additional insights. Is when you unite with me, you are uniting without divisiveness, because I have renounced divisiveness in myself and therefore cannot unite with yours. Our union is therefore the way to renounce the divisive in you.
Exactly. I mean, that makes so much sense to me now when I hear that. You know, that's really, it's the alliance, is what you decide to ally yourself with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you decide to ally yourself with the Christ, then you can't have an alliance with something else. You know, you can't be double, you know, two-minded here. You may flip back and forth, but the one that wants to judge is always the ego. That, I mean, it's just a simple thing. So it's not even you that's doing that. It's a character that you've made up that's doing it. So you don't even have to feel responsible or guilty for, you know, what the ego thinks, because it wouldn't be the ego if it didn't have those thoughts. You know?
And if there was no guilt, there would be no ego.
That's right.
But in truth, the guilt is a misunderstanding. You know?
Exactly. It's
meaningless. And there's nothing to get hung about, as the Beatles.
Exactly. It makes so much sense. So now what Jesus is really calling for here is the end of projection, Ken says. All right. Rather than to try to see sin and guilt in other people, we recognize it in ourselves, and through joining with each other, letting Jesus take us by the hand, we together walk past all the barriers of guilt. And that is what changes a tired and despairing world into one that is filled with light and hope. Not because the world changes, but because our minds looking at the world have changed. That's the key. You know, when Jesus talks about the real world, and he says, in the real world, you're not going to see all this stuff. You're not going to see these things, you know, buildings and streets and, you know, all that. That's not in the real world. Well, what is in the real world then? You know, it's something completely different that we don't even know or understand. But we can be in the real world right now and be in the same life that we're in. We're just in that life without fear and judgment. We're in that life without imagining a story about it. We're just here. And because we've changed our purpose from being the purpose of survival in the world to now the purpose of representing the Christ and being one with the Christ mind, then that is what changes what we see. And you know, whether you believe it figuratively or literally, what you see when you're looking through the eyes of the Christ is not the limited world that we perceive with our eyes of ego. You can't describe it because you can't know it, and words can't be said about it, what it actually is, but it is a completely different vision. And no longer are you bound by the fears and the tethers of the earth, of the world.
Right.
I mean, that's it. Jesus could walk through walls and walk on water.
What water?
Yeah, exactly. Because
and I think that metaphorically, really, I mean, whether or not that was actually done physically is irrelevant, but metaphorically, it's completely appropriate. And the walls and the water and all those things are just symbols for things that seem to separate. And so if we can do those things in our mind, in other words, if we can walk through the barriers in our mind by taking the hand metaphorically of an inner kindness teacher, again, you know, pick your favorite guru or pure non-dual representative, you know, so much the better. But it doesn't really require a specific form, but because it's really, we're using that only as a way to get past the form to the content of the mind, where we recognize we've always had the, again, metaphoric ruby slippers, and we could go home whenever we wanted. And that's because we have that choice in the mind to see peace instead of the ego's misunderstanding. And that's the simplicity of the course, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so simple, yeah.
Should I read on a little?
Yeah, why don't you read on?
Okay, now we're at the top of page 120 in chapter 5. Once again, we can see the important role A Course in Miracles will have in bringing about true peace in this world. Peace is within and not without, and impossible without joining with Jesus in our minds, and therefore joining with each other. And, of course, Jesus could be substituted for any pure non-dual representation in our minds or symbol or figure or, you know, guru, whatever, you know, of some ideal that is a representative of that awareness we took with us into the dream. I mean, we all have that. So someone in you know, an obscure, remote part of an Aboriginal, you know, jungle or desert in some part of the world that never heard of any religion or, of course, certainly A Course in Miracles, has the same opportunity because it's in the mind. It's not out there somewhere. It's always that opportunity in the mind to choose against the illusion and to choose against the dream of separation.
Yeah, so. And there again, the example that we have, and whether you believe in a literal Jesus or not, you know, this is the story that he tells us, is that, you know, he was just a guy, you know, back in, you know, 2,000 years ago in a fairly primitive life. They didn't have electricity or running water or anything like that. You know, they couldn't even travel from one place to another without, you know, taking several days, and the information from other people was not, you know, you didn't have a World Wide Web and you didn't have, you know, missionaries and crusaders, and I mean, he probably did, but, you know, to a much more limited extent. And he didn't have a book of A Course in Miracles, and, you know, maybe didn't even know how to read. I don't know if that's, you know, he probably knew how to read because he, you know, went to the, you know, Jewish training and stuff when he was a kid. But
I think he was one of those kids that were in the school of children should be a seen but not heard.
Yeah, seen and not heard. Yeah, that's probably true. But what I'm saying is that, you know, we think we have such a sophisticated mind, and we have this, you know, sophisticated course that we're, you know, trying to learn and trying to, you know, get through and everything. It's not that hard. You know, all it takes is one thing. And that, but to know that you want what that one thing offers enough that you're willing to do it, that's really, you know, the difference. Our sophisticated minds don't make us any more intelligent or worthy of the wholeness of oneness of God, the wholeness of the sonship. Our sophisticated minds are just as sophisticated as they were 2,000 years ago or a million years ago or when we were amoeba living in a pool of water and thinking, wow, look at this, I can move around or whenever.
I'm a slime thing.
Or I'm a dinosaur, look at me. You know, whatever. We've always thought we were at the pinnacle of evolution, wherever we happen to be, and not realizing it's always the same thing.
Yeah, pardon me for the interruption. I was just going to say, and yet, no matter what life form we seem to identify with, we're all just, you know, dreaming of a place where starved and thirsty creatures come to die, even if we're an amoeba in a big pool of water. You know, eventually that water's going to dry up and it'll be a dehydrated cell. And then the cell is the prison cell. You know, it becomes a biological cell and a prison cell. But even a collection of them, quintillions of however many cells we have, supposedly have, you know, it's still just a prison. Any number is a limit, as Richard Bach said. You know, and any finite boundary to our definition of self has to be a made up dream and truth. But we need to start from where we think we're at. So we need to look at all the different things that seem to be our, you know, the boundaries and the constraints and the limitations that appear to confine us, and just say, is that true? You know, thank you, Byron Katie. How do I know that that's true? Can I be certain? Absolutely certain it's true. And then use the Holy Spirit to turn it around once we realize, no, that's not true. I just made this stuff up.
Yep, I just made it up, and I keep making it up, and it's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But you don't have to stick to your story because you recognize that your story has no meaning, and you know, whatever you didn't, well, whatever has no meaning, you know, why do you need it? You don't. So,
should I finish up?
Yeah.
Okay. So Ken says, he says in the workbook and very clearly that he is the one who saves the world through us, he being Holy Spirit, represented by Jesus or whatever figure in our minds, you know, is helpful. And in our last couple thousand years, we've got, as you're mailing, we've got this pretty handy figure of Jesus, and since he's the one who claims to have authored this book we're in studying together, why not use the author and the teacher and the professor of the course, so to speak, to as our symbolic inner teacher. And so that teacher says in part one, review five of the workbook, "For this alone I need, that you will hear the words I speak and give them to the world." Again, that's the world in our mind. "You are my voice, my eyes, my feet, my hands, through which I save the world." And it doesn't mean we need to do anything physically. It just means we need to do something mentally to shift how we see everything and everyone. And that's our forgiveness classroom.
Exactly.
So thank you as always, Lynn. I enjoy sharing this hour with you every Saturday, and I'm reachable at acimblog.com. And I just remind people who might have tuned in late that this Thursday, 2 o'clock Pacific time, if you go to acim.org/events, you can sign up for the next Let's Discuss ACIM webinar by the Foundation for Inner Peace with Dr. Bob Rosenthal, who's going to be talking about Christmas. Good stuff. So thanks again, Lynn.
Very good. Thank you so much, Bruce. I love you, brother. And I appreciate your hanging with me through all our technical difficulties. And we'll see how this, I don't even care how this recording turns out, because I think it's cool. I will, take out all the empty spaces, but leave everything else, and we'll see how it sounds. Anyway,
sounds great.
Thank you so much. Now I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Carrie and Iris. I guess they're going to read Lesson 138, so hooray. I love you guys, and let me just say hello to everybody in the room. Allison and Nigel and Dove and Carrie and David and Iris and you and me and everybody on the radio.
You too, to everyone.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bruce. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Have a great week, everyone.
You too.